Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader, like that car riding right your tail. Or if you're tailgating right now, all those cars doubling as kitchens and living rooms are on AutoTrader too. Are you working out and listening to this ad at the same time? Well, multitasking pro, cars like the ones in the gym parking lot are for sale on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on AutoTrader. Just you wait. AutoTrader.
It's in Technicolor.
Yes.
They open the door, and yes, then for the first time, people in America saw color. Even in their normal everyday life, they didn't even see it up until that point. And it was just like, that was such a huge moment.
Oh, yeah. There's our own Siskel and Ebert right there. Two thumbs up on Wizard of Oz. First color movie ever. First time people saw color.
Ever.
Ever.
No one had seen color.
And you couldn't figure out that the Scarecrow was the fourth guy on the Yellow Brick Road. Did you know we played that on TV the other day?
But I got Toto and I got the Witch.
Right.
Which are good pulls.
Good
pulls.
Good
pulls, right?
Good
the
pulls.
Witch and getting Toto.
What was the Witch? What was she? What was her name?
She was a Wicked Witch of the East.
No, the East, I think, had the house fall on her early, right? That's why the Wicked Witch of the West showed up.
That was the,
you
was
killed
the
my sister, right?
Pete has fact-checked me.
All right,
says,
so,
yes.
I mean, the fact that we even have to talk about that crap with you is hilarious.
Although
right?
There are a lot of people, because we did the dumb movie trivia last time, there were a lot of people that tweeted in very disappointed that I got as many correct as
I
did.
It was like,
they were really easy.
They were too easy.
They were super
even
easy.
Even for somebody like you who does not watch movies, I do think we need to, like,
make
just
them a little harder.
A little harder. Still real famous popular movies.
Yes. Because the whole point is to have me look like an idiot. It's like,
exactly.
How could you
right.
not know that? Right?
Exactly.
And so if
right.
I know it, it ruins the whole bit.
Yes. Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't know. I'm thinking differently about you all the time, Lisa. I mean,
100%. I think differently about myself.
I couldn't
all
hear
the time.
In my ear thing a minute ago. And, sometimes some earwax gets in here.
That is true.
And Ahmed got to, like, when keeping it real goes wrong. All right. That's what he did. And he goes, you know what? But sometimes I've had it so bad in there, I've had to suck it out.
All right, so there's a little tiny hole,
whoa.
Right? So your IFB, there's a little tiny hole.
Yeah.
Super tiny,
right?
And so, which happened to you before we did this pod?
I didn't have to suck it out.
I'm
gonna
roast
you.
No, you did not. So if a little tiny piece of earwax gets stuck in there, you can't hear anything.
Yes.
Which is a problem in the show. And if it happens during a show, you're really in trouble.
You're in
which
deep
has
crap.
Happened to me before. And so sometimes to get it out, you have to suck it out. There's
Gosh.
No, you have, it's like if you get bit by a snake, you just
yeah,
have to do
only
it.
Only
no
that, that's
wants
like
to.
When you die, you can die. This one, apparently.
If I go on TV with an IFB, I may
career
die.
Career-wise, you're dying?
My career may die.
All right, I just hope on those days we brush our teeth the extra time.
But
maybe.
I spit it out.
Oh,
I do spit
you do
out.
Spit it. You don't swallow?
I do not swallow.
Okay. All righty. All right, moving on. Now we're on to a football podcast. We've broken you
we?
All in. All right, where do you want to start here?
So, we got a lot of things. We got Bust the Narrative. We want to do that, bring that back, because there's a lot of storylines that the season's getting going here. We want you to just crap on them. You know, things that general opinion that people have, crap on them.
Well, I'm not going to crap on them if I agree with them.
Okay, all right. Well, we'll see how many
I don't just go into something going, I'm going to crap on this no matter what it is.
We'll cut out the times where you agree.
Okay.
And then Big Phil's going to be on the show. Got a lot of things to talk about, Big Phil. And Josh Norris, Roto World fantasy expert Josh Norris, is going to be on the show.
I'm excited to talk to Josh.
Talking about fantasy stuff and kind of helping each other. I hope you help each other.
We do.
Because he may have questions for you on what his role will be, and you can give him insight.
Well, I agree. And I like to listen to what he says, too. I mean, he's, always had a little inkling of what guys are going to jump on their radar this year statistically, who to watch out for. He's paying attention to the headlines in every city. Where I'm interested to really hear about is, like, how is preseason football going to affect, no preseason football, going to affect fantasy football? Because usually that's where you get your, steals of, like, ooh, this rookie or this second-year guy, they seem like they're using him more.
Right.
This could be somebody I'm going to draft in the ninth round and, hit gold when it starts. So, I want to see where all that's at. Josh is a great dude.
So we'll get to all that. We're going to get to bust the narrative right off the bat here. But before we do that, you did the show with Mike earlier today. You did the whole 2 hours basically talking about what we saw in the NBA yesterday.
Yeah, right.
What we saw in Major League Baseball, yep. WNBA. NFL, where teams are stepping out of practice, teams are not playing games. We're not going to talk the whole podcast about it. We're going to get into all the things that we talked about.
Right.
But I think it's important to address it off the top because this is something that's on the mind of millions of Americans, millions of people throughout the world, and clearly on the minds of just about every professional athlete in this country right now.
Yeah, this conversation is not going anywhere. And, of course, the fire of it or whatever you want to say has been fueled again, of course, and rightly so, by the shooting of Jacob Blake. I mean, that was an issue. Yeah, again, of course it is. There is a social injustice problem in our country. And we have a group of people where, we have what I would say, to be blunt, a white racist faction in our country who does not really want to accept it, doesn't want to accept it, or just wants to turn a blind eye or is ignorant to it. And again, listen, the big thing to me is there's just so many people out there, and I have friends like this, and because we've talked about this lately at, family barbecue or things like that, or my friend comes over. And, the one thing I finally come back to more than not in these conversations, and what a lot of people do, and especially if they're reasonable, they start to realize, man, I've never really been around black people. I had one black friend in high school or college, and I have an acquaintance or two at work. But I've never really been around it, entrenched in it, grown up in it, been to their hometown, seen what that's like. And, that's to me where there's this, blind spot in America right now for some compassion for black people, African-American people. This is a real issue. You've heard me say it many times. I witnessed it. I couldn't believe it when I witnessed it. Then I couldn't believe how many times I was witnessing it. After, I was in college and around my black friends every day, all day, and all of that, into the NFL. So it's not going to go anywhere. And I understand, black players, it's hard to be able to focus on practice and things like that that seem so minute.
Sure.
When, the places they're coming from, the areas in which they grew up, they're under attack. And at the same time, these are the individuals who have escaped. They've escaped out of there. They got out. They hit the jackpot. They were talented at sports or football. And they find it their duty to speak up for those people who are still stuck in those unfortunate situations that they were in and their family has been in and all of that. So it's systemic. And until this faction of white racist America wants to buy into that, nothing's going to get done. And unfortunately, right now, we seem like we were going in the right direction. And I don't know how you feel, but I just feel like the last week or two now, we're starting to go in the opposite direction.
Yeah.
And I hope it, last thing I'll say, all right, I just hope it doesn't end up being player boycotts. Of course, selfishly, I want to watch the NBA playoffs. I want to watch the NFL football. And there's no doubt about that. And I'm not trying to be able to say I can put myself in the shoes of these guys and really understand what's going through here as me as a white American. Yeah. But I will say just from 10,000 feet above and a person that has, real care for the social injustice fight and knowing that African-Americans and black people have been wrong for a long, long time in this country, I want them to continue to play sports. I do. I still think the best voice and best way to get their message out there, if you're an NBA player, NFL player, is to be on a TV for 3 hours at a time. And then be interviewed and be able to continue to beat that drum of what is going on in this country as compared to let's not play basketball. And I'm sure a lot of these guys are going to go off and do different things to help out their communities and the social injustice. But I don't know if it's going to get the notoriety if LeBron James is, scoring 40 points, a triple-double, and going to go to the NBA Finals. And then here he is with his teammates and Anthony Brown making another comment about we need to fix this issue. To me, that's going to get spread out through social media and TV more than anything that I think they'll be able to do off the court or off the field or anything like that. That's just my two cents.
I think the players are stuck.
I know, that's a tough spot.
They want to make a difference. They want to do something, and they feel like the most powerful thing they can do right now is not to play.
So I
understand that. I hope that we can move towards some solutions that people can get behind.
Yeah.
You know, because I think ultimately that's what it is. Move from awareness. I think if you're not aware of the problem right now, you're not going to be aware of the problem, right? If you're not listening now, you're not going to listen. So we've got to figure out a way to get to solutions, which I think the players are trying to do. It's like, let's stop and let's talk about how we can move forward. But I, the last thing I'll say about it is that I do think it's so important that we move from talking to people to make a point to talking to people to make progress, to achieve
that's
progress.
Right.
And I think, you know, social media, and I'm on it as much as anyone, creates this situation where it's just a bunch of people yelling at each other, a bunch of people calling each other names. And then once you do that, you tune everyone out.
Yeah.
And we have to at some point move to a society and an America where we're talking with each other. And people say it all the time. I'm like, I don't understand how you could feel, how you could have that much hate in your heart. Well, that's a good starting point. You go, why do you have that much hate in your heart?
Right.
And when you talk to the person and they're racist, maybe there's something there that you can say, you know what? That does suck for you.
Right.
You know, your hate is not allowed. That is not cool. But I can see how maybe you ended up this way.
Yeah.
And so if we can start having those conversations, I think we can start to make progress. I hope that's what we do.
I hear you. It just, it's a, you know, again, it just seems like there is a insensitive aspect of this whole thing right now where we're pushing back on this narrative. And I hear too many, and I don't want to get too deep into this.
Yeah.
But I just, there's too many, you know, excuses made, you know, for me to feel comfortable about the situation. And for anyone out there, again, just think this is not systemic. You know, I could sit here and go through a laundry list of problems. And the two biggest things I would always say is, how do you not think it's systemic when in your father and mother's era of their life, or my mom, and I mean, black people weren't allowed in certain colleges.
Yeah.
I mean, in my lifetime, I mean, there was a riot because black people were going to go to school in Boston. So, like, do we really think we've come that far along here in 30-something years and just be like, oh, it's all fixed.
Yeah.
We're good. No. This is going to take, you know, time and a continued, you know, effort and fight and consistency. Because, like, you know, I'll go with what Florio and Tirico and Tony Dungy have said. There's no finish line. It's not like we get there and we just like, oh, we're good.
Racism's
There's no more
never,
racism. It's never
going
to be
away.
Dead.
It's
right.
never going
it's
away.
It's never going to be dead.
It's
so it's going to be a continuous fight. I just hope that more and more people can rally around the good side of this fight and start to have, you know, some appreciation for what black people and African-American people have had to go through in this country.
And hopefully sports can play a part in that,
in,
in getting us closer to that finish line,
for sure.
So there's
Let me
more
tell my dad. Let me tell my dad to call in a little later because
sure.
I know we've gone in a little longer already.
Sure.
What do you guys think, Pete? You want me to tell him 11:30? All right.
You just gave away the time that we do the
Oh, no.
They already know. Pete says they already know. So there's more clips of you and Mike talking about it. Mike, very passionate about it. Online on our YouTube channel right now. But let's get to you brought up narrative, and that is one narrative going on right now. There are going to be some football field narratives happening here in just, you know, a couple weeks.
Yeah.
I'm super excited.
Oh, my gosh.
I am super excited.
Yes.
I told you before, I was excited about the draft. It happened. Got depressed because it was like, now what? And now we're here. Now we're to the season. So here, this we're going to call this Bust or Trust the Narrative. So here are the narratives out there. We got six of them. Let's see if we can we can get through these.
Okay.
Dad's going to
call 11:30, so we'll be okay.
So we're good.
Yeah.
The first one, the narrative is that the Texans are doomed without DeAndre Hopkins. They got ripped off in that deal. They don't have their number one receiver. They are doomed without DeAndre Hopkins. And Pete put in the odds here in the AFC South. And the odds are Indy's favored, Tennessee right behind him, and then a distant third is Houston. So that is the narrative out there that they are in trouble this year without DeAndre Hopkins. Do you want to bust that narrative, or do you want to trust
it? I want to bust that one. I that needs a good, like, right hook across somebody's, you know, head there for that one. That needs to be busted. Okay, well, where I want to bust it is just because DeAndre Hopkins is not there, the offense won't be the same. And no, that's not true. I mean, again, they're losing a marquee player in DeAndre Hopkins. Yes, I know that. But damn, I mean, with Will Fuller there, Randall Cobb there, Brandon Cooks there. I'm missing another receiver that I wanted to mention here. Hold on. Kenny Stills. Kenny Stills there.
David Johnson.
David Johnson coming out of the backfield. I look at that and go, no, no, no. I think this is overall going to be a more effective offense when I just
more
look at
effective more without effective. DeAndre Hopkins.
It's
going to
be the best thing for Deshaun Watson. Wow. I think it'll be the best thing for Billy O'Brien because, and you might have heard me say this before, the big thing is to me, and again, DeAndre Hopkins is awesome, and his connection with Watson was great. I don't know if it was always the best thing for the overall success of their football team because there was times where Deshaun Watson, he just looks at DeAndre Hopkins the whole time, or that's all they call plays for is to get DeAndre Hopkins the ball. Now, this year, it's going to be more wide receiver by committee. And really, all those guys can do everything. When you break down Cooks, Stills, and Fuller. When you just take those three, I mean, those three can run by just about anybody in football and go deep. So now you don't know which one's going deep, which one's going to run the crossing route, the shallow cross. Ooh, which one's going to get the screen passes? You got no idea. Then Randall Cobb, who's the fourth of the receivers there, yeah, he's not a threat deep, but he's great over the middle of the field. Like kind of those, one of the bigger, you know, physical type slot receivers, can break tackles, really smart, was a quarterback in college, knows how to read coverages, all that. So when I look at it from that aspect, and then their offensive line, which was improved last year, and, you know, with their two first and second round picks from that 2019 draft, they're going to contribute more to the offensive side of the ball, where I just look at, I think the offense will be better without DeAndre Hopkins. I really do. I'm putting myself out there. I will be shocked if it's not. My only concern about the Houston Texans is their defense. That's really where I'm worried about. The defense wasn't very good last year, and they didn't do a whole lot to improve it this offseason.
You still got J.J. Watt.
Still got J.J. Watt, but he's not, you know, again, he's really good still. Don't get me wrong. He's not like the force he was 3-4 years ago, where he was basically an Aaron Donaldville there for a while, where you're like, well, fuck, you can't block him. I don't give a shit what the fuck your game plan is. He's going to get off. He's not that dominant anymore. They lost a DJ Reader, right? Benardrick, you know, they got some good middle linebackers in McKinney and what is it, Cunningham, the other one?
Yep, Zach Cunningham.
But Whitney Merciless, like a J.J. Watt, getting up there in years. He's not the threat.
So you're worried about the defense.
I'm worried about the defense. Okay. So just that's my long story short. Okay. I'll be shocked if this offense isn't about as explosive as any offense in football.
Interesting.
Yes, okay. I will be shocked.
I like that. All right. That narrative busted.
We bust that shit up.
Gone.
Busted.
I did write a rhyme for this whole thing. Remember that?
You did. Do you want to read it? Do you want me to read it?
I've got it right here.
Yo, go. Please then.
Do you want to give me a beat? Can you give me a beat? Get like a little like a.
I'm not hitting the, but I'll go boom, 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 boom.
Okay,
boom,
all right, ready?
Boom, boom, boom.
Chris Sims boom, is the guy you have trust boom, in, boom, boom, but it ain't just rhymes that he's busting. Every single year, it's imperative that we go ahead and bust your damn narrative.
B Rabbit. Right. Nothing better than two white guys rapping at a desk in front of a bunch
white.
Of bobbleheads.
You're right.
I
think that might make it worse,
you're
actually,
right,
though.
Right. No, it doesn't. It makes it better.
And if you're still here, thanks for staying. Thanks for sticking around. Okay, so number two.
Yes.
We know what the open is for the next pod there, right there, by the way.
Might be the open for the whole year.
Mike McCarthy. Oh, Mike McCarthy in Dallas here. Okay, here's the narrative. Mike McCarthy solves the Cowboys' problems. So their problems were always Jason Garrett. We needed a change in leadership because the talent is there. That is true, and you even agree with that.
Yes,
they have
I
one
do.
Of the top five rosters in the NFL. The NFC odds makers agree that McCarthy makes a difference because they are favored pretty heavily over the Eagles, -110 for Dallas, +140 for the Eagles.
Wow, so, not much, huh?
Yeah, do you want to bust or trust the narrative that Mike McCarthy solves their problems?
I'm going to trust that narrative. I am. And, you know, I like Jason Garrett. Don't get me wrong. I really do. There's a lot to think of. There are a lot to like there and what he did with the Dallas Cowboys. But, you know, obviously it didn't work. And it didn't work out to the potential that, you know, they had hoped it to be. But McCarthy, you say what you want His offense has annoyed me at times with Aaron Rodgers up there in Green Bay, and I used to like get on Mike McCarthy all the time. Like, damn, can we
too find, conservative?
Yeah, too conservative, too simple. The schemes are so base where I want to go. Damn, here's the same six plays week after week after week. It's just not enough. It's too much on Aaron Rodgers. You know, I've heard him assess that he's changed. Plus, he kept Kellen Moore there.
Right.
So that's great that they have that. There's going to be a little mixture there, and Kellen Moore is one of the young up and coming offensive minds in football. But the biggest thing is this. McCarthy, you can say what you want about all those things we just talked about. Green Bay was always tough as hell. They were physical. Anybody I ever talked to who had to go up and cover a game in Green Bay or had, you know, training camp practices with Green Bay, right? They were always like, man, this Green Bay team, they are buttoned up. Things are tight. It's a tightly run ship. And that's because of Mike McCarthy. I think it's the perfect thing that the Dallas Cowboys need. They need something like that. A little more attention to detail, a little bit of like a toughness. You guys aren't the greatest things on earth. I know Jerry Jones has all paid you a lot of money and you're famous here in Dallas.
You're a cowboy.
But you ain't done shit since, you know, you've been here. Yeah, that's great. Yeah, you went to the playoffs. Whoop-de-freaking-do. They expect more than that. I think he's the kind of guy that's going to like show them that a little bit, give them a little toughness that way. And the biggest thing is to have game plans that marry themselves. You heard me before complain that like the offense was just, we're Dallas Cowboys. We're just going to run our offense. This week, we're going to throw it. Next week, we're going to run it. Because we're just going to show up because we're talented. And we're more talented than you. Okay. Yeah. Half the league, you'll get away with that because you are more talented. You know, but then, you know, the defense last year was the Seattle scheme. We're just going to show up. We're Dallas. Great. How did that work? Oh, 8-8. It didn't work. That's right. You know, I think they'll have a good way of marrying their game plan to where, hey, Mike McCarthy, I'm going to talk to Mike Nolan, the defensive coordinator. This is my plan of attack because I think how we're going to expose them on their defensive side of the ball. And Mike, because we're doing this, you know, you need to take that into account and now adjust your defensive game plan a little bit. And what do you want to do to their team and whatever? And I think it'll be more cohesive that way. Listen, if the offense wants to play conservative, let's eat up the clock and do all that, and then the defense is out there blitzing and like doing crazy things and giving up big plays, what the fuck's the point of like being conservative on offense, right?
Sure.
So at some point you gotta go, hey Mike, this is, you know, hey defense coordinator, this is our game plan this week. And then they come up with a way to figure that all out and put it together. That's what the really good football teams do. And I think that's gonna be the big advantage, and that's why I trust that narrative.
Trust that narrative. And a lot of times when a new guy comes in, a new head coach or a new GM, there are always these sacred cows, right? If you've been there a long time, it's like, well, Jason Garrett likes this guy. He's not going to move on from him. It's like a new guy comes in with just, he's just got a blank canvas.
Clean slate, right?
Clean slate.
No doubt.
Like, whatever you did before, it doesn't matter.
Yes.
Because you got to do it for me.
Exactly.
Right now.
Exactly. It adds an extra, you know, what I like to say, a little hot poker underneath everybody's ass. Oh, man, I got to impress the new boss and do all of that. Plus the energy he brings into the building, too, just because it's different. And guys have been used to one way, and now just having a little different livens things up a little bit. Right. I think a new coach like this is always worth like one or two wins in a regular season, and I think he will be worth that.
So let me do one more.
Yeah.
And let's do it on that team you just brought up, the old team from Mike McCarthy.
Yeah.
The Green Bay Packers. And they got some issues, right? In the draft, it was a little weird. Didn't take a wide receiver. In fact, they replaced or tried to, at least in the draft. In the future, Aaron Rodgers with Jordan Love. So here's the narrative.
Yeah.
Aaron Rodgers and the Packers are headed for a drama season. And I will look here, and this is the NFC Championship odds, Chris.
Yeah.
You got San Francisco, best odds. New Orleans right behind them. Then Dallas. Then Tampa. Then Philadelphia and Seattle. Then Minnesota. Then Green Bay. So they're quite a ways down here. So I feel like the odds makers are trusting the narrative that things are going south, and they're going to have drama in Green Bay. You want to trust it. You want to trust it.
I do want to trust it. I don't think Green Bay is going to be the same team we saw last year.
Yeah.
I don't.
I mean, they weren't that good, though.
No,
they weren't a 13-3 team.
Agreed.
Right?
They might be
the same team and still be 10-6.
Really could be. Exactly right.
Yeah.
That's exactly right. I mean, you know, yeah. They were fortunate how the schedule played out. You know, they got to feast on some lesser teams. You know, they didn't really beat any of the great teams in football last year. I don't look at it. I got to go back maybe and just reassess that. But I'm pretty sure I'm right about that.
I'll do that while you continue your point.
Yeah, please do. And then, you know, I always go back to the old saying, like, if you're staying the same, you're getting worse. And they didn't do anything this offseason to get better. And, of course, the teams around them in their division did. But that's where I want to trust the narrative a little bit. All right, so this one's a tough one. It really is. Because I don't know if I necessarily – so I don't know if I necessarily believe there will be drama, right? I guess that's where I'm going to bust it and go, I don't think there's going to be drama because I think Aaron Rodgers is going to play awesome. And he'll be a shining beacon of hope for the team. And he's going to keep them in games. And, you know, I mean, again, they were 13-3 last year. You go through all the games they played and all the tight, close games, and you just go, oh, they won that one. Why? Oh, because of Aaron Rodgers. Aaron Rodgers. So in a year like this with, like, you know, no offseason, all that, a veteran quarterback like Aaron Rodgers, and Tony Dungy said this today, I agree with him how he said it. These teams have an advantage. Plus, that division, I don't look at anybody in that division to go, oh, Green Bay's in trouble. That team's going to run away with it. I think the Bears are probably a more talented team in the division right now. I don't know. Can Nagy and the quarterback situation, can they put it all together? I don't know. So I guess what I'm saying is I don't expect the same results. I'll bust the narrative, though, of saying that there's going to be drama. I think Rodgers is going to be on his best behavior and going to want to kick ass. I think Matt LaFleur is going to do everything right to keep things the right way, too. If we're talking about drama means 8-8 or 9-7 and they don't make the playoffs or something like that, then okay, then I guess that's drama. And maybe but if we're talking like, oh, we think 8-8 or 9-7 is going to lead to this spectacle off the field and, like, you know, Rodgers pointing the finger at the organization and the organization pointing fingers back at Rodgers, I don't believe that at all. Yeah. I don't.
That relationship with LaFleur is fascinating for me. With Aaron Rodgers, because, you know, it was weird last year. A new guy coming in, younger guy, and there's a little bit of a fight there.
Yeah, right.
But I think they made it work.
Definitely.
By the end of the year.
Definitely.
Mutual respect there.
Yes. I don't think LaFleur
was the guy.
Had any freaking clue they were drafting Jordan Love.
No clue.
I don't know this, okay? I haven't talked to Matt LaFleur, all right, or anything like that.
Yeah.
But I know a lot of people in football, as you know. And the sense I always got from people was that, yes, he did not think they were trading up in the first round to take a quarterback there. He was blindsided just as much as like Aaron Rodgers was at the moment. You know, he probably knew a few minutes before Aaron Rodgers did. Aaron Rodgers had to watch it on TV. LaFleur probably is, you know, on Zoom call with Brian Gutekunst going, oh, shit, we're going to pick him? But
right.
I don't think he was like, we need to start thinking of the future and drafting a quarterback now. No, I don't think he was doing that, nor do I think he wants to do that or be in the middle of a fight with Aaron Rodgers and all those things. So, yeah I think that relationship's going to continue to stay top-notch.
That's interesting because then they could form this bond of, like, we're in this together. You know,
Be shocked. I would not be shocked. Yeah, LaFleur's going to have compassion for Rodgers and knowing that Rodgers has been put in a very tough spot. And then Rodgers is also going to look at LaFleur and go – he'll probably be able to feel and go, man, I don't think LaFleur picked this guy or wanted to draft him. And he's going to realize, man, LaFleur's in a tough spot. And I think that could end up bringing them together.
LaFleur's like, I just went through all the drama last year with Aaron.
The
why would I want to do
things,
it again?
All that, it all went well, right?
Yeah, why would I want to go down
and
the road?
And that was overblown. I don't think there was drama there. I think where they had two guys that are honest with the media. Rodgers talked about the audibles to the media.
Yeah.
LaFleur talked about the audible thing to the media. And people jumped on it because, oh, Aaron Rodgers, he seems like he's a diva.
And I thought it was interesting when you said that some of the drama and some of the reason LaFleur was upset with Rodgers is because he wasn't taking enough chances down the field. You know, there were situations
where there was some of that.
He wanted him to be Aaron Rodgers.
Right.
He was like, I want you to be Aaron Rodgers and take some chances here.
I think that's got to go to the next level with Aaron Rodgers this year. I mean, I know Dad's here listening, but I just think if there was one negative that I see with Aaron Rodgers, and you heard me say this during the quarterback school and all that, is stop worrying about your touchdown interception ratio. Let it fly a little bit. I know that window was tight, but gosh damn it, you got the best fucking arm I've ever seen. Just throw a laser in there and you'll complete it.
Yeah.
You know, and to me, I think he thinks about that a little now, where he's, you know, it's okay because he knows he can't make mistakes because their team's not that great to overcome it all the time. But yet I also think there's a time every now and then where I go, ooh, I wish you were a hair aggressive, more aggressive, and maybe you wouldn't have to have the ball here with 3 minutes left and have to go down and score a touchdown to win the game. Maybe it would already be in control. That would be my only negative. I don't know. You hear that, Dad? You think that's right?
Yes. Be more aggressive with the football. My gosh. If you can hit a driver 350 yards, don't worry. Hit it. But you can do that and make him be more aggressive with your play designs and what you expect out of the play.
Right.
And you know, of course, the league is, the quarterbacks are overcoached in this way. Well, you know, let's take care of the ball. That's all I ever hear. Well, if we don't turn the ball over today, well, then hell, like I always say, kneel on it. You won't turn it over. And it drives me crazy. I fortunately, unfortunately, played for a guy that if I threw it in the flat sometimes on 3rd and 10 and came to the sideline and we gained 5, he goes, well, what's wrong with you? Are you worried about your quarterback rating or percentage of completion and throw the ball down the field or whatever? And just, he would tell me, and I've said this story, he told me once as I was walking down the field, hey, if you don't throw 2 interceptions today, you're not taking enough chances. And always remember, it's, and this is the other thing that drives me nuts with the media, that it's not a game of perfection. It's adversity at all times, this year more than ever. So quit trying to play the game perfect.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to get into names, but I'll do it on TV probably as we go along. But there are quarterbacks, when they throw an interception, they're so distraught that they can't even get their thoughts together. They're sitting on the bench, oh, my God, I threw an interception. You know, it's because they know so much of what we do as journalists or people covering the game and talking. Oh, we look into the numbers. You know, he wasn't very good inside the 20. This guy, oh, my God, it's driving me nuts sometimes they get so analytical.
Well, you're right. Well, we never give the guy a benefit of the doubt. Like, if a guy throws a 4 interceptions, right?
Yeah.
But they were down by 21 points with 5 minutes left in the game, and he's going for it, right? Like, trying to bring back his team. Nobody revisits that after the year and goes, you know, well, 4 of those interceptions were, you know, right, desperation, he's going for it. There's never any of that.
You look at the number.
Everybody just looks at the number and goes, well, oh, he threw all those damn interceptions. He's careless with the football.
Yeah, listen, you're right, and then they're wrong, because if there's a group of people out there that always have their guys and they're going to protect them no matter what there is, their quarterback, I believe in him, he's the greatest guy, I said they should have drafted him, and, you know, then they'll start naming the interceptions. Well, I threw this interception, the guy dropped it, and they go through this whole thing. So, you know, the story's been set, and nobody ever wants to be wrong and can't admit, hey, man, this guy's a lot better than I thought. So they will find ways to show you that interceptions, losing games or winning games because of their guy or whoever they, you know, hitched their wagon to. That drives me nuts, too. Yeah. Oh, my God.
All right, wait.
Relive every play.
One more thing I just want to hear, because, like, if Parcells yelled at you for throwing the ball, like, 5 yards in the flat, right, on 3rd and 10, like you said, and you've always said that, what if you did force the ball down the field and threw an interception on 3rd and 10 or something like that? What was his reaction to you then when you walked off the field?
Well, not like you think a lot of times. I mean, it just was a different era. I know if I played now, listen, I would be much more protective. And, of course, I'd have more options to, you know, pick routes, throw it in the flat, throw some bubble screens and all that stuff. And, oh, wow, his accuracy's really improved, you know, that kind of stuff. But, no. Hey, look, we lost games because I was way too aggressive with the ball, but we won a lot of games, and we won some big games because I was aggressive with the ball, because really I had no choice.
Right.
And the play was designed to hammer it down the field almost in every direction. And maybe you could check it down to the running back in front if you had to. But, you know, it was – we're not going to say we were good, but it was so much of our culture that a lot of times I didn't even think about checking it down. Oh, there's a tight little window. Throw it. Incomplete.
Right.
You know, whatever. So it was different. I know it's different now. I understand a lot of these things. But again, your point about Aaron Rodgers, man, don't just show us the numbers and the lowest interception rate in the history of the game. You know, I don't care. Man, show me your talent.
Yeah, right.
I mean, and what is the best game that you ever saw him? Well, there's a couple. One is down in Atlanta in a playoff game.
Oh,
was
insane.
One of the greatest performances in history.
Right.
And what was the other one?
The Super Bowl, maybe.
Oh, my gosh, the Super Bowl.
It was unreal.
6 throws that were unreal.
Unreal. They let him down. You know, I watched that game back not long ago because it was on the NFL Network. It was on the NFL Network, and there's nothing else on.
You keep watching all these
games. I mean, it was unbelievable. Dad's really not overstating. The game was unbelievable. They would have blown them out if the receivers didn't drop they dropped like 8 or 9 passes the game. But, yeah.
I think, if I remember right, they started the game out. The game, the first play, I think he threw like a 20-yard skinny post.
Yeah.
And I'm going, you're in the Super Bowl down in Dallas, and you start the game out with that? But that's who they kind of were then.
Right.
And then over time, I was there, and I watched it, you know, and I've told you this story, you know, that Mike McCarthy, I'm just trying to find more ways to throw seams and skinnies and this, and all of a sudden it turned into a different offense because right. The league started to change and, you know, whatever. But, yeah, those performances, him throwing the ball, I'll never forget. He threw a ball against the Atlanta Falcons. I think he was going to his left, and it was an unbelievable throw. And after he threw it, he just kind of smirked like, man, this is ridiculous.
Right.
I'm throwing it so well, it's ridiculous. It was. It was a great
game. Yeah.
And let me just – here, can I just bring up another subject real quick?
Yeah, go ahead, Phil.
Because I'm watching TV, and I get so sick of hearing this. The owners just don't care about the players. They got a plantation mentality. That is just – hey, you know, some might. But I don't meet – I mean, I don't know. I think of owners – and if they're involved with the team for real, like
Mr. Kraft really or Jerry team, Jones.
I mean, yeah, Willie Tamamera, our owner, he came out to practice every day to watch us. He loved his players. I mean, and it killed him when something went wrong with a player or off the field in there. So I just, this thought that they just look at these guys as commodities, it might be true in some instances, but really overall, it's not. They have great feelings for their players and sympathy and, of course, enjoy the great moments with them.
Right.
My gosh.
Right.
I would lose a game and walk into the locker room and, you know, play terrible. And there would be Willie Tamamera, and he'd just come by and pat me on the shoulder and, hey, don't worry about it. We'll get him next week or something. I mean, he was right there with us, living and dying with everything. So just that general statement overall about all owners in sports – I think it's ridiculous.
Yeah, good for you, Dad.
Yeah, Phil, you're touching on something there that we wanted to kind of talk to you about and pick your brain about, because you're talking about this characterization of players having an adversarial relationship with upper management, with ownership in a bunch of sports leagues. And so that's certainly been one of the narratives out there. And maybe for some players, a reason why they think that they are going to take a step back and boycott and not play or not practice right now. With what you're seeing right now, Phil, can you take me back to your playing days? Was there ever a time, and we talked about before the podcast, you know, 1992 saw the Rodney King riots.
Right.
So racial tensions, it's nothing new in America, obviously. But when you were playing, were there times where the guys in the locker room were talking about, you know, we don't want to play. We don't want to practice. We want to do something more than just play these games to try to enact change.
You know, so many answers to that question. One, we were raised different as kids and grew up in a different environment that we see now in many, many ways. And, you know, I think parents, when I grew up, were overall, being very general, were much more strict on their kids and how they were raised in a different, you know, it's
definitely
just different now.
Definitely.
So that's one thing. Did we ever have, I don't remember one time where we had any tension, racial tension or whatever in the locker room. And no, we never got into discussions of we're going to hold out. I remember the only time I ever felt tension between the players and ownership, Mr. Mara, was when we went on strike in 1987. And, you know, we came back and I saw him and he had this look on his face. I said, hey, Mr. Mara, you okay? He goes, no, I'm upset. And I was like, oh, my gosh, what? He goes, well, you never called and talked and let me see what you guys were thinking and what I was thinking, try to help you out. And, man, it was crushing when he said it to me.
Right.
Because it didn't occur to me during the strike. Looking back, it does, of course. But it didn't occur to me during the strike to call Mr. Mara and hear his opinion on what is good for us and how we should do things. I mean, it was – so that was the only time. But all the other things you're talking about, Amit, no, never anything like this. And, of course, these are old stories, old times, different times, and we're dealing with a lot of different things now, I understand. So, you know, the players holding out and that, yes, I understand they're upset because they're seeing something happen again that we see too much. And to make a statement and hold out for a day will make people think, but Christopher, I think you said something that was pretty interesting this morning, that, you know, if you hold out or boycott too long, then it might play in the wrong hands. It just it goes away.
Right.
Instead of by playing, I'm watching and I see the, hey, I've watched a lot of NBA games.
Yeah.
And you know what? I see those names. I go, oh, what's he wearing? Oh, Black Lives Matter. Oh, this. You know, it's, just, right. it's always okay, so that catches my attention.
Right.
If they're not out there, you know, I think it changes the narrative a little bit.
Yeah, agreed with that. I do. That's something I said at the start of the podcast. I still think that's their best avenue to bring attention to this is be there. Be on TV for 3 hours. Have the interviews after. It's the best way. It's going to spread through social media on TV. So we'll see where it goes.
Let's transition to the current Giants here.
Okay,
because I
let's
think there's
go.
There's something interesting here that we also want to pick your brain about here, Phil. So,
yeah.
Joe Judge, we talked about him a little bit on our last pod about him making the assistant coaches run, making the players run, being a Bill Belichick clone. You know, Chris knows him well, thinks he's a super good guy and very relatable, so he thinks he's going to be able to pull that off. There's something that he said recently in a press conference. A reporter asked him, it was kind of out of the blue a little bit, so this wasn't unprompted by Joe Judge, but asked him if he would consider taking that red non-contact jersey away from Daniel Jones in this preseason, because you got no preseason games, right? Where is he going to get contact? And he said he would be open to entertaining that idea. So just in general here, Phil, what do you think of that? And what do you think – how do you get these quarterbacks ready in a preseason where we have zero preseason
games? Good
question,
yeah.
Well, it's a great question. I got to see that happen before I believe it. Just the bodies and everything that goes on and you know, these – I mean, boy, did you watch Hard Knocks? Can you imagine if they played that little scrimmage live?
What?
The
Aaron
Los
Donald
Angeles
would have
Rams.
Sacked Jared Goff 20 times.
No, they'd be playing Wolford, the backup quarterback. Where's he from? Well, he played at Wake Forest. Good little player. But, you know, is he going to run the Rams offense? Yeah, I mean, it would have been over. So, you know, and listen, if you call the quarterback live, as much as the players on the team really think and like you and know that you give them a great chance to win, a lot of those guys, oh, man, I can't wait to hit him.
Right.
It's just, it's not mean. It's almost like he's my friend, but I just want to whop him one time because he deserves it. So, like I said, I'd have to see it to believe it. I will say this about running the laps, the whole feedback and everybody talking about, I think it's hilarious.
Yeah.
It's just hilarious. Oh, my God, you mean he's going to make them jog a lap around the – I've seen it. I've been in New England. Christopher, you were there.
Yep.
They jog. I mean, hell, I could walk backwards faster. And they get back. But it's a form of bringing you together on what we're trying to accomplish.
Yep.
And it's also good, you know, players see it. And oh, you know, I don't want to go do that. That's kind of embarrassing. And I know if we'd have done something like that, the Giants – we'd all have been going, yay, picking up the pace, you slow. You know, everybody been yelling and having fun with it. And it really, and I say this to people going to kill me for it, I don't care. It kind of brings you together.
Right.
I think it's a great little bonding experience. And then make the coaches run? Oh, my, that's even better. That's awesome, too, because now that brings the coach down to the player's level even more.
Yes, no doubt.
I hadn't thought about it that way.
It makes everybody accountable. It's like, oh, the linebacker screwed up? Oh, wait, linebacker coach, aren't you coaching them? This is their fifth mess up today.
Yeah.
Why don't you run a lap with them? Join the crew.
There's so many things bring you together as a team and whatever, and treatment like that, and when you can be punished but still have some fun with it or whatever and laugh or not a lie, just – I think it's great. Can you imagine an assistant coach? I mean, here they've been in the league, a lot of these guys, they're going, take a lap?
Yeah.
Holy Christ, I'm definitely walking the lap.
That's the only,
I can't run
it's the only thing I worry about, though. I will say that, just a little. That if the coaches might
revolt.
You know, revolt or be a little, for lack of a better phrase, butthurt a little.
So
like, how dare he showed me up like that?
So I covered the San Francisco Giants in baseball.
Right.
If he's I'm going to interrupt.
Go ahead.
If Joe Judge is a good coach, and if he's the man,
and
if he really had, then he knows which coach to run.
Yeah, okay? That's right.
He knows which ones that's not
true.
To run.
Right.
Yeah. Now, if he doesn't know that, then he's going to fail as a NFL head coach.
Right.
That's something you must always know and have a feeling for. Every coach knows who they can really take send messages through into the team. You had it, Christopher. Listen, if you were all tender and couldn't take it, John Gruden probably wouldn't have yelled at you as much as he did.
Yeah, right.
But he knew you could take it. You took it like a man, and you weren't offended, and, you know, just whatever, and you move on. And of course, I'm sure when Gruden was yelling at you, a lot of the players were like, you know, getting some laughs.
Definitely.
And that's what you want. It's sending a message, but in the right way, that goes through you, of course, but also connects with the other players too. And you know, so the whole story. I had many writers call me about it. I didn't see any of them write any of this stuff that I'm saying. So it must not have. See, they had an agenda. So I didn't fulfill their agenda, so they didn't write it, which is really disgusting, too.
Right.
Yeah. I was just going to add that I covered the San Francisco Giants for a number of years, and Bruce Bochy, one of the legendary managers in Major League Baseball history, notorious for being very difficult on his assistant coaches. And what he would do is, if a player was messing up or if a player wasn't producing, he wouldn't really yell at the player. He would yell at the coach in front of the player.
Right.
And so the players then felt
guilty.
Felt guilty that they just got their assistant coach or their hitting coach or whatever yelled at. But I will say, the coaches were not crazy about it. They didn't leave. They were all very loyal, and they won 3 championships while they were there.
Right.
But they got to a point where they didn't enjoy it.
Well, it's not always enjoyable in that environment. I mean, listen, they're not like always, you know, trading pleasantries up in New England. Like, Bill, thanks for making me be here 140 hours this week. Thank you for grinding me into the ground and letting me not see my family.
Right.
Bill's like that. He is very hard on his coaches. You've heard me say that before. He's a little bit more player-friendly, and he drives his coaches into the ground more than people realize.
I think Dad can attest
to that.
I know he is, and that's probably who he is. He might have learned it from that other guy, you know, that I played for. Pat Hodson, you remember him, Christopher?
He
coached tight ends and wide receivers for us. And I was talking to him. I was down at his house a couple years ago, and we started talking about Bill Parcells. And I said, damn, Pat, he was hard on us. And I heard he was really – he goes, hey, Simsy. He had some nicknames for me I won't say. He goes – you guys had it easy. He destroyed us.
Right.
And he goes, he would destroy us. And he would yell at his coaches, like you say, right in practice, wide receiver mess up. Hey, Hodson, I'll tell you what. If you don't get these guys straight, you know, whatever, you know, just like, wow, you know, and everything. And so here's the final point to it is, and we get done talking, and I go, man, he was brutal. He goes, you know what, though? If he called me today and said, hey, Pat, I need you to be my wide receiver coach, I'd pack my bags and leave immediately.
Right.
And I go, wow, really? He goes, he set the table for us so well that we could coach our guys and really coach them the way we wanted or whatever. We could do that because the environment he created where it made us better coaches. And we could, and I just went, it's a great story, and it just shows you so much goes into being a head coach, and it is truly not always X's and O's. It's about, you know, connecting with the players. How are they going to listen if you don't connect? So that's my last on that.
Yeah, Phil, you mentioned connecting with your coaches, and you connected how John Gruden would connect with your son, Chris Sims, by berating him. And there is a video out there that goes viral, like once a year, from time to time, where John is going through a lengthy play call, 2 plays, actually. And, Chris, it was, your first 10 days of training camp, and Chris is not able to spit out the play in the huddle.
Of course not.
Have you seen that video, Phil? Okay, what do you think of it?
I don't think anything of it. I mean, that's just his way of, you know, telling you, look, this is pro football, and and this is the way it's going to be, and I hope you can handle it. And he's probably testing Christopher right away just to see where we're at, what he can handle, and how I can treat him. So
here's,
he's making
here's,
a big
yeah.
judgment.
Here's
on
my
his
question, Phil. Yeah. Should anyone have to handle a play call of that length? Because we did a whole separate video, and Chris laid it all out on what. This is a long play. This was like a full paragraph.
Yeah.
This play. Say it again. Say it again.
West right tight, F left, 372, Y sticks, D spot. Or we had the other one, which was, Viper right, 382, X, green right, X, shift to Viper right, 382, X stick, lookie.
Like, all those words, Phil, are so unnecessary. Like, compare that to a play call back when you were playing.
Yeah, Dad, give us some, like, Bill Parcells, I want to hear Bill Parcells' offensive plays, and then you had the year with Dan Reeves there at the end. I'd love to hear a little bit of like what that was all about.
Yeah, well, of course, your offense, they wanted to tell everybody what to do there.
Right.
The offense I had under Ron Earhart and Bill Parcells, our first play would be six. That was a formation. 82 protection semi. That was the play call.
Oh. So six was the form. 682 semi, right. It's six and your
splitbacks.
Splitbacks, right.
Tight end to the right, even and odd. Tight end to the right. Speed outs, 12 yard. Do you need me?
Oh, well, hold on. Uh-oh, we might be losing Phil.
Diana's yelling at me. I'll talk to you on the phone.
Hold on there, dirty Diana.
Yeah, sorry, uh-oh. Christopher. It's your son's birthday this weekend. Let me talk. Okay. but
682 semi. Yeah, go ahead.
When people heard the word semi, that told us everything. That meant it was a five-step drop. It told the wide receivers what to do. They knew the adjustments to their route, all that. It told the backs what to do. There wasn't no halfback flat, fullback swing, none of that, nothing. It was all. And they've proven this is the best way to really learn an offense because you see a picture instead of seeing the words.
Right.
And all of our plays were like that. What would be a hard one?
Oh, wait. Before you do this, 682 semi, just give me the whole play there. Like the two route side receivers, you said, ran 12-yard out routes?
12-yard speed outs, which, we were basically the kings in the NFL throwing those things.
Right. What did the tight end do?
The tight end hooked over the middle.
Right.
The backs had protection issues, whatever. They had to read the defense, and then they did little hooks outside the box each side. So you had like five guys across the field, and that's the great Mark Bavaro catch against the San Francisco 49ers where he dragged the whole team with him.
Yeah.
That was exactly that play call.
Gotcha.
And so you had to really learn and hear one word and knew what you had to do because of that. So everything was like that. Oh, we got really moving. A two slot H motion, 74 double seam. Okay. Oh wow. That would probably be the longest one we had of all.
Right.
And that would be one of our seam plays that Bill Belichick has stolen and Tom Brady, and they take it up there and Charlie Weiss, and they run it to death because we ran it to death.
Right.
But that was about as complicated as our play calls got. We shifted a little. Sometimes, but very little during the year. We shifted a lot in the Super Bowl against the Denver Broncos that year, trying to get away from Carl Mecklenburg.
Oh, is that what it was?
Yeah, but that was it. So it was very simple. Dan Reeves, I just talked to Dan Reeves two nights ago for about 45 minutes. We laughed, and it was hilarious, but I don't even know if I can do it justice. He called out a play, and I said, oh, my gosh, Dan. So 682 semi to them would be red right, 89, I don't know why, 80, I can't even remember why it was 89, 69, rip Liz, so there it was. And then it could be halfback, that, rip Liz, halfback check, fullback swing, and you just go, whoa, to throw a little outcut, I could say all this. We had running plays, the power play off tackle, that had 23 words to it.
Right. 23. I remember you complaining, Dad. I told Ahmed before this, before he came on, because I said, I knew we were going to do this. I said, I remember my dad complaining, learning the Dan Reeves offense at one point, and you were complaining about how many words had to be used just for to call the quarterback sneak.
Oh, my God, quarterback sneak, it'd be 20 words.
Yeah.
Yeah, 20 words. And not only did we run the quarterback sneak, we had a whole box. He learned this from Mike Ditka. Being coach of the Bears, that's a great story. One day we'll talk about it. But he had a box in the right-hand corner of the play sheet, and it was just quarterback sneaks. I generally had minimum of five, usually at least six quarterback sneaks, different ways to run it. Fake it to the fullback, cut back here. Fake it here, take two steps back, read it, do this. I mean, it was really complicated. And this is the truth. We made every quarterback sneak the whole year.
Wow.
That's how – I mean, so you think, well, that's kind of stupid to spend that much time on quarterback sneaks. Man, we picked up a lot of third downs just because of that.
Right. Crucial.
And a lot of times he had it where he'd look – I'd look over there and he'd just say, go. And I would yell out the play to everybody. Nobody knew it was a quarterback sneak, and we would run it. So,
wow.
But it was long, and he was opposite. It was odd right, even left. So I would get in my car going down there during the offseason, be driving home going, okay, 9-7-5-3-1 to the right. Oh, okay, 8. And one of the assistants said to me, Phil, no matter how much you study, no matter how long you play in this system, you're going to think about it every single play.
Well, it's so, like, against anything. Evens always to the right.
Well, it's – and this
but,
is
but, – wait, this, I just want to ask him this. It has to – Dan Reeves came from the Dallas Cowboys.
That's right.
Which came from Tom Landry.
Yeah. Tom Landry.
Who was a defensive coach. So on the defensive side of the ball, the right was even. Huh. And the offense is the left is even, right? So is that why they're seeing it through his eyes, right? That's usually how these things work.
That's how it worked. That's why they did it.
Yep.
And so I'm studying, and I'm really, really sweating, just going, okay, well, I got to be the smartest guy in the room, so I'm going to learn this thing inside out. So one day I show up, it's during the off season, probably middle of April, maybe even earlier than that. George Henshaw was a quarterback coach. I'm walking through the locker room, get dressed to go work out and do the training. And he goes, Phil, come here. I got something to tell you. I go, What is George? He goes, even right, odd left. I went, really? He goes, yeah, we made the decision last night. Dan's going to do it for the team here. You know, don't want to switch everybody around. I said, oh, my God, George, thank God. It's just driving me.
That's amazing.
This is why players
even the coach was, like, overjoyed.
Yeah.
Because he just goes, it's unnatural.
Right.
And I don't know if anybody still does it in the league. I don't think there is. I don't think so.
I was going to say, this is why players don't want to be traded. Right? Even if I don't like it here, I don't want to have to learn a whole new system, all the terminology.
Well, that's why, there you go. Why are there so many words in almost every offense in the NFL now? Because when you get traded, all you have to do is listen to the play, X in. Oh, okay, I got it.
Yeah.
I run an in cut.
Yeah.
You know, fullback this. Oh, I got it, fullback, yeah. So it does make it easier for players to adjust to teams, but it's not like the old days where our team barely changed from year to year. A few additions here and there, but players didn't. There wasn't free agency, there wasn't trades, all that kind of stuff like there is now.
Phil, we gotta let you go. We got Josh Norris on the line from Roto World, but before you go, Chris has a big one Saturday. He's turning 40. Can you believe it that Chris is going to be 40?
Your little boy.
Yeah. No, it's hard to believe. And it's, there's, of course, whatever there is. I'm glad I'm here to see his 40th birthday and all that. But, I really, when I saw it on TV, you start thinking back to when they grew up. And, as a father, I do it almost every day. I go, should have done this, should have done that. And you just can't hold their hand everywhere. But sometimes I just go, should have been there when he made this decision, done things like that. I think about it all the time. And of course, you live with it. That's just what it is. But hey, he's a good person. I love him as my son. I'm proud of him. And he always handled himself well with players, all that stuff. So happy 40th, big guy. And I just don't want you to be disappointed in what little gift I'm going to give you.
Okay. It's less than $1,000 in cash. Don't even keep it. Keep the hell of it.
It's always about cash. Yeah, I've learned a great gift. Diana goes, what are we going to get him? What do you mean, what are we going to get him? Just put it in an envelope. It's over. What are you going to buy him? Another shirt? Another shirt that buttons at the top button? No, I'm not doing that either.
I know you're not.
Thanks for having me on, guys.
Yeah,
y'all
thanks
have a great
again,
day.
Phil. Hopefully you're not in too much trouble with Diana.
All right. Talk to you later.
See
okay.
You. Bye.
All right, that was fun. That got emotional there a little bit. That was cool.
Damn,
that was cool.
He was making me starting to have to bite my lip there, going, damn, don't get too serious here.
That was cool. He was glad that he's made it to your 40th. Glad that you've made it to your 40th. Me too, with some of the decisions you've made in your life.
Oh, hey, yes, there's no doubt. It went from my mom, my dad, and my wife. I don't know if I'd be here right now. I needed their help. I needed their logic to, you know, be spit in my brain sometimes because I was just a hard-headed idiot at moments in my life.
Happy birthday, Chris.
Thank you, man.
For the world's greatest athletes.
This is the showdown we've been waiting for.
There is nothing like competing on the world's biggest stage.
It's a world record again! Gold for the United States! Unbelievable!
And when that stage is Paris, anything can happen.
I have never seen anything like this!
How about that?
An Olympics unlike any other.
What a performance!
The Paris Olympics, this summer on NBC and streaming on Peacock.
There's no place like the movie theater. The smell of fresh popcorn welcomes you to a full body experience, while candies and sodas compete for your attention.
Pick me!
Hoping to join you in the best seats you've reserved on Fandango. It's where movie lovers buy tickets, pick seats, and double up on rewards points, all online. All that's left is to walk in, snack up, and sit back. Visit Fandango.com or download the app today for your ticket to the movies.
I'm ready to go.
Streaming now only on Peacock. Five rich and famous international soccer stars. They have everything except love.
I think girls in the past have gone for me because of what I've got.
That's why we're going undercover.
We're setting them up with single American women.
They don't know we are famous. They don't know we are rich.
And they'll have to hide their true identity.
What do you need for work?
I'm an ad salesman.
Oh, God. What am I doing?
Love Undercover. New series streaming now only on Peacock.
From one
legend
phone guest,
to the next.
From one legend to another, do we have Josh Norris from Roto? Oh, we got his picture. Oh, cool. I didn't know we were doing
look
that.
Look at you.
We got him. Nice. All right.
Look at you. I miss y'all so much.
You look so good. Look, you two are wearing Henley shirts together. You're so cute and matched together. This
looks
so exciting.
This looks better because it's got a brown stripe on the back. It's a little more fashionable. Probably paid a little more money for it. Josh, thanks for taking some time here because, as you know from, I mean, you know Chris as well as I do, he craps on the fantasy game sometimes because he doesn't want his friends to call him all the time. That's the only reason. He really actually enjoys talking about it, but his friends berate him so much, and so he sends them
added to their viewership.
And sends them to Josh.
Yes.
And so it's good to have you here. Josh, let's begin with your thoughts just overall on this fantasy season. We got no preseason games. We got no information from that. And so how different is this from a ranking standpoint for you? How different is it for most people from a drafting standpoint?
Well, it's totally different. I mean, I love preseason football. I'm sure Chris is the exact same way in that you get to see these rookies that just came into the league. And at some point, I would much prefer, you know, 100 NFL snaps than looking back at five college football games, you know, because everything is much more equal when they're on the NFL field. But maybe more importantly than the rookies not being able to show out, it's what the situations and how teams are, you know, playing people on the depth chart.
Exactly.
Like, I'll give you a few examples here. You know, like Jay Gruden is now in Jacksonville and he brought Chris Thompson with him. Last year, Leonard Fournette got 100 targets. Okay. What if the first third down and long situation, Leonard Fournette is not in the ball game and it's Chris Thompson? Like, that's a drastic change in Leonard Fournette's value this year. I mean, I can keep going down the list. Austin Eckler hasn't been good in, you know, short yarded situations. So is Justin Jackson going to get that role this year? Devin Singletary versus Zach Moss, who's going to catch more of the layups this year for the Buffalo Bills? So really the usage and the depth chart changes is what I care most about during preseason games.
Yeah, it's a good point. I mean, you know, I think we talked about this a little on Monday. Preseason gives you some great context clues to go, like he's saying, oh, this rookie's, yeah, he didn't start the game, but he's in on the next drive with the starters. So that tells you he's in the mix to get in any game, regular season, in those first few snaps of a football game. And that does it. Goes a long way. All right, so, yeah, I mean, you're a little screwed this year. You're not going to get any of those context clues. So, like, who do you think the rookies that people are going to latch on to right now that is going to make at least people feel comfortable? Like, CeeDee Lamb would be one that would jump to my mind right away, where I would think people are going to buy that. They don't need to see preseason. Give us some other ones, too.
I'm very end and trying to exit every single draft with two rookie wide receivers, Henry Ruggs and Jalen Reagor. Let's start with Jalen Reagor first. I mean, this is an Eagles team that for two off seasons has searched for some type of playmaker and explosiveness offensively. They got it last year with DeSean Jackson against Washington, and he absolutely blew up. It was amazing. Then after that, you know, they had to feature two tight ends more than any other team in the league, and were the only team in the league where the two highest reception getters were their tight ends. Now you bring in Jalen Reagor along with DeSean Jackson healthy, and this is kind of the first time that Doug Peterson is going to have like a movable chess piece in that someone who can be explosive near the line of scrimmage or vertically or manufacture touches. And I just think that TCU, and Chris, you can back me up on this, used Reagor awfully last year.
Awful.
I mean, when you have a player with that type of speed and that type of explosion, they didn't try to give him the football nearly often enough on easy situations.
No doubt.
And I absolutely think Doug Peterson, with an offensive player quite like Carson Wentz, who's played at an MVP level, will be able to get the best out of both DeSean Jackson and Jalen Reagor, and both are extreme values already.
Yeah, that's a good one. You know, because Jalen Reagor was a hard evaluation. He wasn't my favorite receiver coming out. There's no doubt about that, as you know. Mm-hmm. But I think Josh's logic is spot on right there. You know, whether we like him or not, I don't really give a damn about that. I think he's right. He's going to have a niche within this Eagles offense. Again, Doug Peterson, he came from Kansas City with Andy Reid. He's looking for his Tyreek Hill, who's a guy that can fly down the field, get speed sweeps, reverses, maybe return a kick or a punt or anything like that.
Usage will be high.
The usage will be high. Whatever you think of the player, if he deserved to be a first rounder or second rounder, he is going to have a key part in that offense.
So let's make this mutually beneficial here, Josh. Are there a couple players that you've, and you mentioned a couple off the top there, that you're kind of scratching your head and thinking, like, how will this player be used in this offense, or how will this coach want to use this one? Are there a couple that you want to throw maybe at Chris and see if he can give more insight into how he may be used? Are there a couple you're thinking of here, Josh?
Well, that's a great question. I mean, I'll try to move beyond all the rookies.
Sure.
My biggest question for you, Chris, is this. I mean, last year and in the past few years with Kirk Cousins, okay?
Yeah.
In the last 3 or 4 years, he's been the seventh best deep ball passer at worst in a single season. Last year, his wide receiver in Stephon Diggs led the NFL in 20-plus yard touchdown catches. I mean, he had 6 of them. All of those are gone this year. And so who is going to fill that role? I know it's a different play caller now, not to Kevin Stefanski. It's Gary Kubiak. But I look at this Vikings team and say, okay, they run play action among the highest rate in the NFL. Hopefully that continues, because that's where Kirk Cousins is at his best. But Justin Jefferson is not a vertical receiver.
Right.
I mean, he won near the line of scrimmage last year. And Adam Thielen, that's not really in his bag of tools. So who do you see as a potential player that can fill that vertical element on the Vikings? Because it's so imperative for them to fill that.
Well, I'm pulling up the roster here just as we sit here and do this, and I got it. But he is a good deep ball thrower. And a lot of their deep ball success, to like what you just mentioned, it's predicated on their run and, oh my gosh, it's Dalvin Cook up the middle, it's Madison, it's 4 yards, it's 6 yards. We got to change our defense approach, which then leads them to giving them great looks to be aggressive down the field and do that. You know, I don't think the offense is going to look a whole lot different there as far as like schematically. I think Gary Kubiak and Stefanski have a similar type of style. And, you know, of course, Kubiak was very involved last year. As I sit here and just look at the names on the list, there is nobody on their roster that jumps out to say they're going to be that guy. You're exactly right. Now, Thielen, I think, has more juice in the tank to go deep than people realize. So, yeah, they're going to have to expand his horizons and maybe his route tree there. And then Justin Jefferson, yeah, you hit it spot on. Like, his bread and butter is going to be over the middle of the field, you know, a lot of 10 and 12-yard type receptions. But I will say, again, I saw enough in the SEC that he can run by some people, right? So I think they're just going to have to maybe be a little bit more creative about how they get them down the field. Where last year, like to your point with Stephon Diggs, there were some plays where it was just like, hey, we're going to run play action. But Diggs is just going to run a straight go. Right. So, like, if you just think the guy's close enough to him, you want to just launch it after the play action, let him just beat him with speed. I don't know if they have that guy. They might have to double move it or run a little bit more of an intricate route, whatever that may be, to make it happen more consistently. But you're right. There's nobody on this there that jumps off to me to be that type of guy.
You got something to add there, Josh?
Can I ask the other – yeah, can I ask the other end of that equation? Because Stephon Diggs is someone, as I just mentioned, he was the best vertical receiver in the NFL last year. But in fantasy circles, as soon as he is now associated with Josh Allen, everyone is just scared off. I mean, he's going as the wide receiver 28 this season, which is ludicrous after being a top 20 wide receiver last year. Chris, what is your feeling on the fit between the two? Because for me, from my perspective, Brian Daboll and this team – realize the weaknesses and the strengths of Josh Allen, maybe one of the best connections and relationships in the NFL with play caller to quarterback in the league.
Right.
And so last year, we know that Cole Beasley and John Brown had incredible years. And Josh Allen, while he has a big arm, he might not be a good vertical passer right at this time. But if they get on, you know, four or five or six of those misses last year to Stephon Diggs, then you get a tremendous value again at wide receiver 28. What's your feeling about the fit and if they're going to use him the same way the Vikings did last year?
I think the fit is awesome. I don't think it'll be the same way the Vikings used him to where, okay, I don't think Stephon Diggs, like, he's not going to be quite the big play threat that you've talked about as far as yards per catch like he was for the Minnesota Vikings. You know, I think they're going to have more of an extensive, it's going to be more extensive offense to what you said. Daboll comes from New England and Josh McDaniels and all of that. I think that Diggs is going to cut into some of John Brown's and Cole Beasley's production. I mean, they didn't trade, you know, what they traded for him and gave him a little sweetener for his contract for him to just have a ho-hum 50 reception year and flirt with 1,000 yards. No, and I think Diggs, what makes him special, and Ahmed's heard me say this, is, you know, I think he's interchangeable. He can run Julian Edelman routes over the middle, or he could be that speed guy you just talked about in Minnesota last year where he's on the outside and we just go straight. Josh Allen does have to improve his deep ball throw. He's got too good of an arm to miss on some of the deep ball throws he makes. And to me, the biggest thing with him, and, you know, again, I like Josh, you know, yeah, that, and I think he works really hard, and that's all I ever hear from people up in Buffalo, he has to throw his deep ball higher. That's his biggest problem. He tries to hit the bullseye from 65 yards away, and I want to go, no, that's not the right approach. You're never going to hit the bullseye on 65 yards away. Just throw it high and far, let the guy run under it, and it gives you room for error. And as we know, DBs are DBs for a reason. They can't play the ball anyways, and more times than not,
the receiver can adjust better than
that. The receiver can adjust, and the DB usually shits his pants and starts to, like, trip over his feet, and he falls down, and all
that.
Then
he has to go change pants.
And then it's a disaster.
That's a problem. That's a problem. It takes him off the field for 10 plays.
All right.
That's interesting. Did you have another? Because I got.
Yeah, go ahead. You ask first. Go ahead.
Let's just go, like, big picture here, Josh. If we can go big picture, early round draft strategy overall here for the first couple rounds, because there's those years where everyone says you got to take a running back with your first two picks, and then you get some wise guy, maybe it's you, Josh, this year, says don't take a running back at all, go for some of those wide receivers. So what's a, you know, obviously it changes depending on if you're top of the first round, bottom of the first round, but overall, what are some early round draft strategies here?
Well, I think more than ever, people are trying to get their safety blankets and two running backs to start drafts. I mean, 14 running backs are going in the top 20 picks of your fantasy league. And it's all those feature backs that you talk about, all the way at the top from Christian McCaffrey, Saquon Barkley, Ezekiel Elliott, down to Austin Eckler, Nick Chubb, and Aaron Jones. And the reason for that is because in rounds 3 through 6, it is littered with wide receiver ones and wide receiver twos, because I don't think the league has ever been better, one, from a volume perspective of how often they're throwing the football, but two, just the talent of multiple receivers on teams that can put up massive points. I mean, I'll give you this.
There's 20 top 10 receivers in football, as I've been saying for the last few months. I mean, literally, but sorry. Go ahead, Josh. My fault.
Will Fuller is going in the sixth round this year, okay? And Will Fuller is a player who I think, again, we've seen it. If he plays a healthy season with Deshaun Watson, there's a 16-game sample here. It's 82 catches, over 1,200 yards, and 7 touchdowns. And if you don't play scared and you get Will Fuller and he plays 16 games, then, man, you have a top 15 wide receiver on your hands. And once again, he's going in the sixth round. I can mention other names. Michael Gallup, Tyler Boyd, Keenan Allen.
That's amazing.
So it's – yeah, so – to me, again, if I wanted – if I want to feel great about my team and be risk averse, the two running back approach, then loading up on tight ends and wide receivers in rounds 3 through 7 is what I feel most comfortable with.
Just while you're on the running backs thing, where's Clyde Edwards-Helaire falling, you know, with the love affair of him and the media right now in Kansas City? Is he in that
the media?
Group?
You're part of that.
Well,
love
I know I am.
Too.
I know I am.
Don't throw it on the media.
I'm in the media.
Yeah, I know. That's true.
I have a love affair for him as well. I mean, don't play scared when you play fantasy football. You play to win, right, Ahmed?
Yeah.
With Clyde Edwards-Helaire, this is a player who basically set an SEC record last season in receptions since the year 2000. I mean, this is going to sound like hyperbole, but why can't he have a rookie season or even better than what Christian McCaffrey did in the NFL? Because he's associated to the best offense, the best passing offense in the league. And so often, you know, we see great runners come into the NFL that aren't really comfortable in the passing game. Well, I mean, one, Clyde Edwards-Helaire is coming out of a Joe Brady offense, and Joe Brady is now an NFL play caller.
Yeah, right.
And two, he has so much experience in the passing game, not just out of the backfield as a pass protector, but also, you know, they split him out in the slot and they split him out wide. Plus, inside the tackle running, he's great at that. I mean, his ability to pick up yards on his own and create his own with that lateral step, Chris, that we talked about all throughout the draft process.
Right.
It's insane. And positive game script situations that the Chiefs are going to be in. I know that they've cycled through like Darrell Williams and Damian Williams and LeSean McCoy. I don't see a reason why Clyde Edwards-Helaire can't have a Kareem Hunt-like season potentially during his rookie season. And he should be focused in the middle of that first round. But Ahmed, let me ask you this.
Yeah.
Would you feel comfortable taking him ahead of, you know, certified studs like Derrick Henry, like Dalvin Cook, like Alvin Kamara? Because that's the real question there. That's the real question.
See, this is where I get into trouble. Because oftentimes I say yes. Like the unknown, I want, because I think that's where you win your fantasy leagues, right? When there's a little bit of an unknown, right? You don't quite know exactly how good he's going to be. You feel like maybe there's some value there. So I would take him, but I've been screwed by that.
I hear you, though. No. I feel like, I heard you say Derrick Henry, Dalvin Cook. Who was the other name you threw out there?
And Alvin Kamara, because those are the running backs that are going as running back 4, running back 5. And running back 6.
Right.
So.
I would, you know, Derrick Henry and Kamara are going to get big time cut touches, I would think. I would definitely feel comfortable about him over Dalvin Cook, but I'm with you guys. Like, don't be scared there. I mean, I don't think Clyde Edwards-Helaire is going to be sharing the workload with much going on. I think it's going to be him, to your point, Josh. He's going to be the guy. All right. I'm interested just in, like, you know, first off, who are the quarterbacks going off the board first?
This is what
I mean. I don't know. Yeah,
this is another one too, where Josh, I suck at. It's like because every year they say don't take a quarterback early,
right?
And so I didn't for a long time, and then my quarterback always sucked.
Yeah.
And so then I was like, you know what? I'm gonna take a quarterback early, and I did it, and my quarterback sucked. I have not had a good quarterback or a productive quarterback for so long. So how do you do that? What are we supposed to do?
Well, let me ask you this, because we just talked about wide receiver being as deep as it's ever been. I would also say the same thing for quarterback in fantasy football.
Yeah.
Like, what if I told you that Drew Brees is going as the quarterback 11 this year, or Matthew Stafford is going as the quarterback 12 after being, you know, a top 3, top 5 player at the position while he was healthy for the first 8 weeks of last season? I mean, we've seen Jared Goff put up massive numbers, and he's the quarterback 16. To me, the cheat code of fantasy football is waiting on quarterback until after everyone in your league has already selected one. And let me tell you why. I absolutely agree. And there is at some point in the draft where I consider Patrick Mahomes and Lamar Jackson of value. But right now they're going at the end of round 2. So, like, you know, your 23rd or 24th overall selection. Meanwhile, like I mentioned, Drew Brees, Tom Brady, even Carson Wentz, who I absolutely love this year, are going in rounds 10 and 11. And you have to think of it from this perspective, okay? It's a package. So if you're taking a Patrick Mahomes and Lamar Jackson, who are amazing and are going to put up massive points each and every week, that means you're bypassing the ability to take a Kenny Galladay or an Allen Robinson, okay? So that means maybe your wide receiver that you have to take is in that Tom Brady or Drew Brees tier, which is much closer to John Brown or Mecole Hardman. So you have to ask yourself, would you much rather have Patrick Mahomes and John Brown or Patrick Mahomes and Sterling Shepard, or would you either have Drew Brees and Chris Godwin or Drew Brees and Mike Evans?
Yeah,
right?
That second part sounds better. It does sound better.
Right. So it's not just, hey, I'm going to get myself the best quarterback, which is fantastic. And I absolutely understand it because I think, again, both are in their own tier. But it's the ability that you have to and the concern that you are definitely decreasing the value of at least your wide receiver three or your wide receiver two on your team.
Hey, Josh, where do you have Kyler Murray?
I have Kyler Murray as my quarterback three. He's the consensus quarterback. Yeah, he's the consensus quarterback four right now, but he's in that tier, and that tier is important. It's Dak Prescott, it's Kyler Murray, it's Deshaun Watson, and it's Russell Wilson. The fantasy football community, and Chris, you're probably along with this, thinks Dak Prescott is in line for a massive season, and I do too.
That
passing offense should be the number two passing offense in the NFL this year. What I can't get out of my head, Chris, is last year with Kyler, the situation around him was brutal. And there were so many plays where he elevated the talent and the production of everyone around him. Like, I think back to that Atlanta Falcons game where he instantly felt pressure on his backside, climbed the pocket, ran out the back, reset, and hit like Christian Kirk for a 45-yard reception. You know, like, these things are rare. And so now you add DeAndre Hopkins, you hopefully improve that offensive line. You have a team in Cliff Kingsbury who he probably wants to run exactly what he wants to do in comparison to last year where they had to switch halfway through the year to more tight end sets and more of a running game. Like, this year he's going to have three and four wide receivers that he absolutely loves. And I wouldn't be surprised if we see Kyler Murray be that quarterback that emerges into that real first-tier player like we talked about with Mahomes and Lamar Jackson.
Yeah, I get that. Okay, just staying on the quarterbacks because, I mean, it's interesting to me. I think you hit it. There's a lot of freaking good quarterbacks in football right now.
Yeah.
You know, that's the thing. You know, I always say it's not a quarterback problem in the NFL. There's an offensive coordinator problem at times in the NFL. But give me some other – like, I'm curious about guys with big potential, right, this year who could jump – like Baker Mayfield. Like, where's he
Cam
going?
Newton.
Or Cam Newton. Or even, like, a guy like Drew Locke you're hearing about,
sure.
Right? Everybody's excited about that offense. Like, where's a guy – like, those guys, we could be sitting here at the end of the year going, these are the top five statistical quarterbacks in football. I want to hear your two cents there, Josh.
I'll give you three names, and I'll start with Cam Newton, who's going as the quarterback 15, Ben Roethlisberger, who's going as the quarterback 18,
man,
and Joe Burrow as the quarterback 19,
yikes.
Right? And again, that shows you that you can wait until the other 11 people in your league take quarterbacks, and you can still wind up with one of those names. I mean, Ben freaking Roethlisberger, the last time he was healthy in 2018, he was the quarterback 2 in fantasy points per game. Now, yes, that was with Antonio Brown, and it was with the great Juju Smith-Schuster, and it was in a good running game. But guess what? This team, if he is healthy, they are going to win football games. They're going to be a very good offense because of that fantastic defense and that still good offensive line. But because of the Mason Rudolph and Duck Hodges meltdown last year, that entire Steelers team is in line to be considerable values this year. And I'm getting to a point in drafts where Ben Roethlisberger, I'm okay exiting with him as my quarterback one, because if he does fail, look, I just pivot over to Jimmy Garoppolo, who has a great first five games of his season. I pivot over to a Joe Burrow, who a lot of people are going to be nervous about because he's a rookie entering the league. So again, the quarterback position has never been deeper, and that's why I tend to wait on it more than ever.
Since you were talking about the Steelers right there, if Chris was doing his wide receiver rankings for fantasy, he would have Chase Claypool possibly top 10, maybe top 5. What do you think? You love his talent.
I do.
You
I think
love
he's going to be
talent.
One of those guys. He's going to be the DK Metcalf of this year, maybe even better. I mean, because I think that offense is a little more creative than Seattle's up there to where, yeah, I would say watch out. No, you know, I don't. What do you think, Josh?
Let me ask you this, Chris, because in our itinerary, it has Deontay Johnson versus Chase Claypool. Do you think they're really going to play that same spot, right? Because to me, it's going to be Juju in the slot. It's going to be obviously Eric Ebron at tight end. It's going to be Deontay Johnson as more of the, I mean, this is a generic term, but more of the route runner, right? More of the one-on-one and man coverage. And then Chase Claypool and James Washington might battle it out in that, you know, third wide receiver spot on the outside as that vertical element. Because we know that Chase Claypool last year was, you know, one of the best in all of college football in terms of vertical passes plus contested catches. And I could see him overtaking James Washington, but not really overtaking Deontay Johnson in terms of – and also the Steelers run three wide receiver sets at 70%, so they're going to keep, you know, three pass catchers out there at all times.
Yeah, they definitely are. You're right. I would expect it to be that the combo you talked about, though. Juju kind of working the slot – maybe a little interchangeable with Deontay Johnson, who could do that. But, you know, yeah, mainly outside. And you're right, maybe Deontay Johnson is more the intricate route runners, the post corners, things like that, that, yeah, wow, he can really stick his foot in the ground, has great hips. But I would think Chase Claypool is going to have – just by what I've seen in person, what you just said, yep. He was one of the best deep threats in college football last year, and he was open a lot more than what he got the ball on. I don't think the stats can really tell the story about how much, you know, the guy was truly open and there to strike. But, yeah, I just think that between that size, his physicality, and his ability to go up and play the ball, the kid's got phenomenal hands. I mean, yeah. Phenomenal. To where I think he's going to be one of the mainstays. I think him and Juju will be the two mainstays when it's all said and done, for sure. I do. And again, I don't have any inside info, but other than just right now what we're hearing out of their camp at times and things like that, I haven't texted with anybody there to really know. But when players, like, every 4 days keep talking about one guy, that usually tells you he's making his mark on camp. So I would expect big things from him.
This feels like 7 years ago, Chris, but you and I talked about Chase Claypool during the draft process, and I think we both compared him to Vincent Jackson. I mean, he could be that type of talent.
No doubt.
He is. And I mean, if we trust any organization out there that can, you know, successfully draft wide receivers outside of round one, it's the freaking Pittsburgh Steelers. But again, maybe even you're saying this, it's going to let me wind up with even more Deontay Johnson, which I absolutely love. I mean, he's going as the wide receiver 36. Last year, he had 92 targets, turned that into 59 catches, almost 700 yards, and 5 touchdowns. I think he's a fantastic route runner.
He is.
Is not the athlete that Chase Claypool is. But, again, there's a discount on all of these wide receivers and all of these players on the Steelers right now. And if Ben is healthy, that can absolutely wind up as a top 10, maybe even a top 7 offense in the NFL.
Yeah, agreed.
Chris is staking his reputation on Chase Claypool at
apparently,
this point.
At
this point, your reputation is tied to how he does his first year. Josh, before you go, that's awesome stuff. So you've already given us so much. It's like get a running back early, a lot of good wide receivers, some tight ends in the middle rounds there, wait on a quarterback until the end. If there's one other, you know, big idea that you'd like to throw out to the fantasy community that listens to this podcast, those are good ones already, but is there another one out there, Josh, that you'd like to pass along?
Well, everyone just wants to know who to draft, so I'll give you two more names.
Yeah.
Okay? I think unofficially RotoWorld's official player of this season is Terry McLaurin. He's going as the wide receiver 19 right now. I have him much closer to the wide receiver 15. And, I mean, he was phenomenal last year. And you talk about preseason. I mean, he only played about 13 preseason snaps last year, which gave us the indication, oh, he's going to be a focal point of this offense because they just want to put him in bubble wrap and have him start out there in week one. But, you know, the upgrade that they have in offensive coordinator, I mean, what Scott Turner and Norv did last year for DJ Moore was incredible. And DJ Moore and Terry McLaurin had about a 42 target difference last year. Just imagine what Terry McLaurin can do this year. He's going to go to the moon with 42 extra targets. And then the other name I want to bring up is Henry Ruggs. Henry Ruggs is going around wide receiver 45-ish. I think people, because he has that 4.3 under speed, then they think of him as just as vertical playmaker.
Right.
But for John Gruden, I think he's going to be a yards after catch dynamo, someone who they can manufacture touches to, funnel targets to. And I mean, he is so good after the catch that I understand that Derek Carr, when he does throw vertically, he is good. He just doesn't have that tendency to want to throw it deep 20 plus yards very often. And I think because of that, people think it's a bad match with Henry Ruggs, when in reality, I think Henry Ruggs is going to lead this team in targets. I think he's going to lead this team in receptions. And I think, again, as your wide receiver 4, potentially, as your wide receiver 46, he is going to be an insane value this year.
Yeah, I'm with you there. Those are good names. He's just like Jalen Reagor to me, the Henry Ruggs situation. It's the same type of thing. They're going to do everything they can to just get a weapon, the ball. And he's going to have a lot of touches. And I agree with Josh. I think he's going to have his own little niche in that offense.
Before you go, our producer, Pete Demolimelitis, he must have a dynasty league and have Josh Jacobs in there, because this whole interview, he has been berating me. He just said 100% correct. So this is selfish, this question here. He wants to know about Josh Jacobs and specifically Josh Norris, if he is guaranteed to get, what is that, Pete? Enough
a lot of receiving work in that offense. Pete's just feeding me the line at this point. Is he a first-round back? Is he a first-round back for you?
He's going in that first, like, round two, round three turn. Let's put it that way. And, Chris, this might be a better question for you because what Josh Jacobs did in college his final season, he caught 20 passes. Yeah. And as a rookie, he saw 27 targets and caught 20 passes again. But when you go back and watch those 20 receptions, I mean, he should be getting 40 catches.
No doubt.
He should be getting 50 catches.
No doubt.
He's amazing in that area. Yet, and maybe it's the broken shoulder that he played with last year, but the team, again, this offseason, because all we can do right now is kind of read the tea leaves. They, you know, re-signed Jalen Richard. They drafted Lynn Bowden to a running back number. Now they have Theo Riddick in there. It makes you think that when running the football, yes, Josh Jacobs, there were times last year he was a top five runner in the NFL. I mean, he was incredible. But if they have negative game script more often this year, it makes you wonder if they are going to throw the football. And if you just write down all the things that the Raiders did this offseason, the answer is no. But his talent and the way he catches and is in the receiving game, the answer should be yes. So I might be just be begging for it like Pete all season long.
No, I think you're right. I mean, shit, don't listen to me, Pete. I've only told you that's what fucking John Gruden told me. But don't, you know, just, yeah, fuck me. Just
he
listen to
Josh. He wanted to go to the expert. Jeez, no. You blame him? He's got maybe $100 riding on this dynasty team. He's got to go to the expert here. 200, Pete says. Josh Norris, Roto World. So, Josh, where can people go to get this stuff more than just in 30-minute increments on the Unbuttoned podcast here?
Yeah, well, we have the best deal in fantasy football right now. It's our premium products. Just go over to rotoworld.com/edge, like it says down there. It's $4 a month. I mean, that's the freaking price of guacamole, okay? Just bypass guacamole one time at Chipotle. Get yourself all this information. I know you all have been putting it off this year because the world is a crazy place, but we'll catch you up. We have rankings, we have tiers, we have projections, we have profiles in every single relevant player. And also throw out there this. Yesterday we completed a 16-round draft with 12 industry experts. Sorry, Ahmed, you were not involved.
That's okay.
And that is up on NBC Sports' YouTube page. You can find it just after this, I'm sure. And it's also up on the Roto-World Football Podcast, where we have podcasts throughout the summer to help you win your league.
And all quarantine, Josh was working. I mean, he was pumping out YouTube videos every single day. It's just like different angles. And so they're all out there on the YouTube page as well. But, yeah, sign up for that. $4 a month. I am a member. It is very useful. Josh Norris, thanks so much.
You're the man, Josh.
For coming on. Let's do it again.
See you guys.
Sometime.
Good seeing you.
Thanks, dude.
I miss you.
All right. Miss you, too. We'll talk to you. Let's, like, after maybe the first 2 or 3 weeks of the season, let's get on this again and talk about it again. All right,
let's
bro. See you, man.
All right. That is Josh Norris. I didn't know we'd get to see him. I thought we would just hear his voice.
Well, we're used to my dad who, like, can't work FaceTime or doing that shit. He just is like, I just want to talk, you know. So, yeah, it's good.
And we both had the Henley on.
Wait, you did.
This
so
was
cute.
A very cheap one that I bought.
Yeah.
And Josh's was more expensive.
Right. All right.
It looked better.
All right.
That was good, man. That was a lot of
pod. We got a lot of info in today.
We had friends good come talk. On here. We had your dad. He wished you a happy birthday. Happy birthday,
thanks,
Chris.
Man. Appreciate it.
Enjoy it.
Boom.
We
yeah.
can't do
I,
that.
I was almost did it, too. I
almost
was
did
like,
too.
The hell with it.
And we almost died.
Yeah.
If we had done that, instant death.
Death.
All right. That's it.
Yep. We'll be back Monday. I know we're going to start to go through win totals, playoff predictions.
Yep.
We're going to AFC win totals. I know we got to do the defense of our
your favorite team,
Rapid City Rushmores. Mm-hmm. All right.
Which, by the way, if you're still listening to this pod, thank
yes.
you at the end of it here. And if you're from a Dakota, reach out to us. I said that last time because
yeah.
I said we're heroes of Dakota, right? We're
right.
heroes.
Heroes.
We put a pro team in Dakota, South Dakota,
that's
I
all
think.
That's we do.
But it could be North Dakota.
Yeah.
But if you're from Dakota, reach out to us because we'd like to make contact with you. As your heroes.
I love it. All right. You got anything planned this weekend?
No. Yeah. I really don't.
Okay.
Yeah.
I am going to do lots of retoxing and enjoy my 40th birthday party this weekend.
Enjoy.
So, yep. Everybody be good. We'll be back next week. You know the lineup. Monday, Thursday. We're going to really start getting into, AFC win totals, NFC win totals, playoff predictions, Super Bowl winner, all that. I'll have all the answers for you before the season starts. You won't even have to watch the games on TV. It'll all be there.
Be
the
done.
Answer key.
Yeah.
But everybody be good out there. Be safe. You the man, Ahmed. Clap it up, baby.
Woo, 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 woo. My last podcast is a 39-year-old.